This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Shulman administration has won preliminary approval from the federal government to implement a health care payment reform plan that dramatically changes the way that health care providers are paid. The program is known as All Payer, and its goal is to cut the growth of health care by reimbursing providers based on quality of service and positive health care outcomes. Governor Peter Shumlin says the current system, which pays for every specific procedure, has to be replaced.
Research suggests that one reason that we spend more money than anyone else in the world on healthcare and have less good outcomes is because fee-for-service drives an inefficient delivery system that doesn't put quality first.
So how would this change affect healthcare providers and consumers throughout the state? And will it be able to achieve its ambitious goals? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor, great to have you back on the program.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Today, we're going to spend a fair amount of time in the first part of the program on the proposed all-payer payment reform plan. Do you have some questions about the plan? Does it make sense to you? What are your thoughts about this new payment approach? The state hopes to finalize this deal in less than a month. Does that provide enough time for Vermonters to thoroughly understand how it will work? Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So to start off this discussion, let's talk about where we are right now with this system known as fee-for-service. So in your mind, why doesn't it work? People get billed for each and every procedure. If you have some complicated care, each element of the care is detailed for the patient to see. Everything is very transparent. What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it is that it's bankrupting us, number one. And number two, while we would be happy as a state and a nation to spend lots of extra money on health care if somehow it meant that we lived longer, that our babies were healthier, that we got better outcomes. But we don't do that either. So we're both spending money at a rate faster than we can earn it, and our outcomes are no better than folks who spend a lot less than us and get better results. So, you know, I don't think there's too many folks out there who would say the system that we have is sustainable, everything's beautiful, let's just stick with what we're doing. This fee-for-service thing is the best thing we ever could have thought of. Let's just talk about what it means for Vermont in terms of the current system. First of all, from a consumer standpoint, someone who wants to obviously have good health outcomes, right now it's very, very difficult to get access to primary care, preventative care in Vermont, because our providers are literally going out of business. The system as it's designed now, the only way to really survive it, I would argue, is to do lots of quantity. Keep the machines running, keep the testers running, keep everyone moving. Just get as much quantity in a door as you can. Let's think about it this way. If you're a provider, and I'm not suggesting that any of them do this because they don't have their very best intentions, but if you're a provider, you want the patient who's going to need the catastrophic care, because you got a bill for every procedure. Someone who just wants a checkup and go out the door, that's not going to do you much good. I mean, you've got to balance, you got to pay your bills. So I think there's pretty broad consensus across the country right now that, number one, our healthcare system is unaffordable. Number two, it's not sustainable. Three, it'll bankrupt us. But most importantly, number four, we're not putting our attention where we should, which is on prevention, diet, keeping healthy, working out, doing all the things that we know would avoid the chronic disease that is costing us so much and creating so much tragedy in our healthcare system.
So do you think that healthcare providers now are calling for a lot of tests that just aren't necessary?
Well, the evidence suggests that that is the case, that, you know, if you just look at objective studies, we're doing a lot more procedure than anyone else in the world, and our outcomes are no better.
And you said yesterday at your press conference explaining this, you know, if you buy some very expensive equipment in a hospital, they're going to use it. Is that the problem, that we haven't really carefully reviewed expenditures for high technology, and now that we're stuck with it, the hospitals are going to use it?
I don't think that's the problem. I don't think it's quite that simple. Listen, let's talk big picture for a minute here. if I can, before we get into the weeds on this one, because this is complicated stuff. But when I came on as governor, I said, you know, my job is going to be to create jobs, grow prosperity. I think probably every governor that gets elected, regardless of party, that's their goal. I looked at the evidence of why Vermonters were struggling. You know, why is it that we're, you know, because we've been in a slow recovery here for the first time in recent history, incomes actually went up roughly 5% over the year before. We've seen job growth. We've got the fifth lowest unemployment rate in the country. You know, things are looking pretty good. But if you talk to middle-class Vermonters and to businesses, particularly small businesses, they'll say, you know, we're still struggling to make this work. We're to pay our bills or to, in a business, expand. And one of the reasons, the biggest driver that's holding us back there is healthcare costs. And I don't think there's anyone in Vermont that wouldn't say, when I get my premium increase, whether it's my business that gets it or I get it, and it goes up 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 14, sometimes 30% a year, you know, that's picking the pocket that I was hoping I would get my extra cash to be able to help send my kids to college, pay my bills, pay my rent, whatever it is. So this is the single driver. Now, this is how the math works. In Vermont, we spend about $1 billion a year on Medicare and about $1.3 billion on Medicaid, roughly. That's big money. If just think about healthcare trends. A family of four right now, this fictional family of four we all talk about, let's just take family of four making $60,000, either two parents working or one parent has a good paying job. Right now, they're paying roughly $24,000-$25,000 a year for a platinum plan on our healthcare exchange or wherever they're getting it. If the projections for healthcare nationally, which are 6.5% over the next 10 years, were to actually happen to Vermont, we would spend that $24,000 plan in 2025 would cost you about $43,000. It will roughly double. That would equate, if you're making $60,000, to about 58% of your income. And that's before you do the out-of-pocket expenses and all the other things that come with having a healthcare policy that isn't that great. So my point is, I don't think there's anyone who thinks that we can survive a healthcare growth rate that grows faster than our incomes. If we can hold that, what our all-payer agreement, and it's a draft, I want to emphasize this is a draft that's not done yet, but the draft agreement that we've come to that we're going to talk to Vermonters about over the next several weeks, if we were to hold healthcare spending to 3.5%, which is the goal of this program, instead of the 6.5%, that's $10 billion in Vermonters' pockets saved between 2015 and 2025. $10 billion. That equates to $16,000 for every living Vermonter. If you're a family of four, you can do the math. You're talking $64,000 that you would not be spending on healthcare. That's huge.
So I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who are listening to this, and here's the concept that healthcare providers are going to be rewarded for positive outcomes, for quality of service, not all the quantity that's right. going on now. So, you know, that all sounds very good. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are wondering, how does this thing work? Are there going to be bundled payments? I go to the doctor. Who's going to determine how much gets paid? I mean, just from a practical point of view, how does this thing work?
So let's talk about that. And it's Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance or private pay, as we call it. So everyone in a basket. No provider needs to do this unless they want to. In other words, if some chiropractor or doc or nurse or whoever hospital wants to keep with a fee-for-service system under this draft agreement that we're discussing, they can. So it's entirely optional. If you choose to do it, you would get paid instead of being paid for every service that you provide, you get paid for keeping somebody, the population that you are looking after, healthy. And if you think about it for a minute, that totally changes the dynamics in the healthcare system. Right now, many patients feel like they get their 10 or 15 minutes with their provider. They get rushed out the door because that provider's got to continue to fee-for-service bill in order to pay their bills at the end of the day. Under this new dynamic, your healthcare provider gets paid for keeping you healthy. So suddenly, they're going to want to spend the time with the patient to make sure that, you know, that cough that you're talking about, that it's just a cough, you don't have lung cancer. That, you know, that ache that you're having in your back, that it's a muscle, not some kind of cancer in your body or whatever. In other words, their job suddenly becomes to ensure that you're doing a good diet, can encourage you to work out, get off the smokes. Let me give it a real life example of how. Go ahead.
But before you do that, just from a practical point of view, so is this to say that each primary care physician is going to be paid X amount of dollars per year for each of their patients?
That's correct.
Okay. And what about the specialists? Do they get X amount too?
So specialists, in almost all the cases in Vermont, now nationally, tend to work for a hospital network. And as you know, the hospitals have been buying up many of their private practices. So it would be up to the ACO to decide who gets paid what.
That's the Accountable Care Organization.
Exactly. Government has nothing to do with that. But free market's going to work there. In other words, if you aren't paying your specialists enough, they're going to say, see you later. I'm going to work for someone else. And frankly, most of them now are working on salary for those organizations. So there's probably no huge change there in Vermont. What changes in Vermont is suddenly primary care, preventative care, becomes the first stop in terms of financial success for a physician or for a doctor or for a nurse, for anyone, any provider in a system. And I think that really changes the dynamic. We can all think of examples in our friends or family. I'll give you one in mine. So I was talking to a gentleman the other day who's a friend of mine down in Putney who just had a heart procedure up at Dartmouth. And his complications, he had previous heart issues, and I didn't get too much in the medical stuff, but his next process is what he needs is to go to Boston to have work done on his heart that they literally can't do at Dartmouth. They don't have the technology to do it. While I'm talking to him, he's standing outside because he's not allowed to smoke in his home. It's a rented home. And the reason I got to catch up with him, I was going by on my tractor, was because he was sitting down there taking a smoke break. And I said, you got to get off those things. He goes, yeah, that's what my doc keeps telling me. I've gone from 2 packs a day. I'm now down to about 3/4 of a pack a day. I said, you're heading in the right direction, but you're going to die if you keep smoking those things. And we're about to spend a ton of money on your heart. What are you thinking? Under the current system, there's really no incentive, aside from the goodness of their heart, for the system to tell that person to stop smoking. In fact, they probably do better if he smokes, and they got to keep doing procedures to him. That's called a broken system. Under this system, all of his providers a long time ago would have had an interest in getting him off those smokes, helping him do it, so that, and spending any amount of money, therapy, whatever is necessary, so that he's not now on all of our healthcare bill getting work done in both Dartmouth and Boston to try to keep him alive. Now, that's a general example, but I bet we can all think of tons of those in our families and friends and neighbors. The point is, our system's broken. It's inefficient. Vermont has an opportunity to move to a more logical system that saves us a ton of money and gets better healthcare outcomes, better for the customer.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. We're looking at this all-payer healthcare reform plan. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to John in Richmond. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, I have a couple questions. The governor was throwing out data, and I was wondering, one, if that was national utilization or was it Vermont utilization? Secondly, there's a question of what is the responsibility in all of this of the actual patients, the actual utilizers of the thing? Because a provider can talk till they're blue in the face, but if the person doesn't stop smoking, I end up subsidizing that. I don't happen to smoke, but I'm going to somehow pay for this person's health care eventually, because. And thirdly, I think the supposition that anybody in healthcare is going to allow or justify their own lack of action based on the fact that they'll benefit from it financially is a big leap, and I'd like to hear some comments from the governor on all of those. Thanks.
Thanks for calling, John. So I'll try to hit them quickly. We're using national data in terms of growth trends. So when we talk about growth trends in healthcare, what's projected, those are national numbers. Vermont has done a good job in the last 6 years anyway, at least since I've been governor, with the great work of the Green Mountain Healthcare Board of holding healthcare costs down. But I think that the chair of the board, Al Gobay, and the members would tell you that in a fee-for-service system, regulation is never, in the end, going to do what it needs to do. You need to change fundamentally the way you structure payment for healthcare providers. The second point, in terms of what was the second one?
Patient
responsibility. You're absolutely right on the comment about patient responsibility. I would argue that under both systems, when someone smokes, we all pay for it. And, you know, it all comes out of all – it drives healthcare costs for all of us. The difference of the new system is, as you – I'm sure you recognize, that when the providers suddenly get paid, reimbursed for preventative care and getting that person – they do better when that person's off the smokes. And I bet we could think of more creative ways to get people to do the right thing on cigarettes, obesity, diet, exercise, if the system weren't designed as it currently is to hurt you financially if you stop doing catastrophic care. In other words, I would argue that right now the fee-for-service system, where our providers get paid in an incredibly unfair way, 40 cents from one provider, 60 from another. Every once in a while, someone walks through the door and you get paid a dollar for a dollar's work. This is insane. You know, our providers, they want to do health care. They don't want to do financial management. But if they can't do a lot of quantity of care, they can't literally pay their bills. So I would argue that this system will give the financial incentive to the provider to find ways that we haven't succeeded with so far to have folks make better healthcare choices to avoid catastrophic care.
Let's turn to Anne, who is calling from Waterbury. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the program. Anne, are you there?
Lost her.
Well, we'll try to get Anne back on the air. Today in the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. We've been discussing all payer and what it means for the state of Vermont. Love to know your thoughts at 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, Governor Peter Shumlin, and we've been talking about the all-payer healthcare reform payment system. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Addie, who is calling from Newport. Hi, Addie. Welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
Great. What's on your mind today?
So I'm a nurse, and I'm currently going to school to become a nurse practitioner. And hello, Governor.
Hi. Thanks for coming on, Addie.
Yes. So my main concern, and again, we all know fee-for-service, it has so much trouble. It hasn't really done much for the quality of our healthcare in the United States.
Right.
And I thank you for trying to reform that. But my main concern with your plan is we do have a lot of providers who are out there talking to patients about diet and exercise and the ways to prevent your health conditions from getting worse and burden the healthcare system more. But the truth of the matter is we are going to have patients who are just not going to listen because everybody has that right. We can give them all the information, all the teaching, and they may still refuse. And my concern is if my pay is tied to how my patient's health is, like, yes, that's definitely an incentive to work more on how I educate my patients. But if their health doesn't improve, then my pay gets stopped. It kind of just doesn't sound very fair.
So, interesting question. And, I think it's important to point out that your pay in this system would be determined by the partnership that you were working with, not by the state of Vermont or by government. Obviously, if you chose as a nurse practitioner, and congratulations for working on that, and good luck because we need more of you, If you chose to stay with the fee-for-service system because you're really concerned about your income and you think, you know, you could figure out which way you thought you would come out better financially and choose which system you want to participate in. We're not telling any provider they can't stick with the system that we've got right now. Second, I think that the challenge that you have as a nurse and a nurse practitioner to be is that the entire system is not in bed with you doing the work that would help convince folks to lead healthier lives. And let me give you an example. Right now, we know that opiate addiction is not only tragic, we're losing the battle, and signing folks up for a lifetime of addiction or death. I mean, that's really how high the stakes are now. But it also costs a ton of money. We know, this is just one example of a disease that's addressed in our all-payer waiver. We know that more times than not, the root cause of addiction to opiates is prescribers over-prescribing OxyContin and other painkillers that then get you eventually to the cheaper, pure heroin that's easier to get, cheaper on the streets, and feeds your addiction in really horrid ways. I would argue that in the system that we're designing, just with that one disease, opiate addiction, the provider, when they prescribe that, when they do a procedure to you and they send you out of the door for, you know, you've had your molars taken out or whatever it might be, and you've got, you know, 30, 40, 50 OxyContins in your hand, I think that the prescribers in a system where you get paid for keeping you healthy is going to go, hey, wait a minute. I'm not going to give Adi, 60 OxyContins for this. I'm going to give her 4 or 5, and if she needs more, I'll tell her to call me, and I'll get her more if she really needs them. But maybe Advil will do. So my point is there are so many examples I'm sure that you can see in the healthcare system where the work that we do without giving it enough thought in a system that's driven by fee-for-service doesn't always have your first thought, how do I avoid further catastrophe in terms of healthcare going forward. And I think that a moving fee for service to an outcomes-based payment system will give those incentives in every example, from opiates to diet to smoking, the rest. Now, can you convince people to do things they don't want to do? No. But if we're all in a system where that becomes the top priority, I think it'll make a difference.
You're talking about an enormous change in Vermont's healthcare system here. And you're holding, or the Green Mountain Care Board is holding, a series of public hearings in the next couple of weeks, and the board wants to vote on this thing in less than a month. What is the rush? There are some people who think, you know, there's no way that Vermonters are going to understand this very complicated system in the next 4 weeks. So what's the rush to put this into place?
Well, the rush, I mean, I guess, let me work it from the back end. I had three hopes for healthcare when I became governor. The first was that we'd finally have universal access to health insurance so that Vermonters stop having to make horrid choices between getting sick and going to the doctor. I would say mission accomplished. Because we embraced Obamacare, because we did the healthcare exchange, despite the bullets that I've taken on that, it's now working. We have a 2.7% uninsured rate in Vermont. That's universal coverage. That's a great accomplishment, and I'm incredibly happy to say that as you know, we've had bipartisan governors working over the years to try expand access to insurance. I would say we're there. Vermonters should be really proud of the fact that we now have the lowest uninsured rate in America, universal coverage. No one's making horrid choices about whether or not they get care, whether they can pay for it. Second, it's still tough. Don't get me wrong. It's still expensive, but we made good progress. Second, I wanted a publicly financed single-payer healthcare system. We're not going to get that, and we've all talked about why. But one of the things I always said about single payer is whether you're in a premium-driven system that we currently have or a tax finance system that I wanted to go with to, neither would work, neither would be affordable if your rates were going up 6, 7, 8, 10, 20% a year. In other words, people were going to reject the system regardless of how you funded it. It was going to be unaffordable. We now have an opportunity to move to a system that can finally get costs under control while improving quality. I think that's what this draft agreement does. We're going to go on the road, hold several hearings. But my point is, Bob, if we were saying providers have to do this and otherwise they can't provide, you know, practice medicine in Vermont, I would agree with you. But that's not what we're saying. We're saying, come understand this agreement. This is optional for providers. If they want to join up, I personally, as governor, believe it's going to be a much better system, but we've got to all make it work together. And it has exits built into it, and I did that deliberately, so that if a future governor is talking to Vermonters and they say, listen, this really isn't working for us, with 180 days notice, we can get out of this thing without penalties. Now, that would be a huge change and a real shame, but we did build in exits. But to say we've done this hastily, we've been working on this since the day I became governor. And so it's been a long process. It's been a tough negotiation. I think it's a good agreement for Vermont, and I'm looking forward to taking the draft on the road.
So in 6 weeks, we have a gubernatorial election. Why not let the next governor decide if this is the right path to go down?
Well, I think under this agreement, the next governor can decide that. And what I want to do is set it up, have it in place, have the conversations, continue the work that I've been doing on this with the Greenmount Healthcare Board. You know, let's remember, this hasn't been happening in isolation. The Greenmount Healthcare Board every Monday morning has been meeting with providers throughout the state in work groups to talk about what kind of agreement we should write and what it would look like. So this isn't coming for the providers. This isn't coming out of nowhere.
But do you really think that a month from today, a majority of Vermonters will understand how this system is different and have an opinion on whether or not it's a good idea?
No, I don't think that's a reasonable expectation. But I also don't believe that Vermonters are going to have an understanding of the intricacies of the healthcare system for the changes that are coming to us already brought to us by the federal government. In other words, there's so much change going on in the system right now. And the question for Vermont is, how do we improve care and increase affordability? And Bob, here's the problem. The fee-for-service system is broken. There is no one that can tell you that the current rate of growth in healthcare and going back to a 6.5% rate going forward, which is what many of the national projections are suggesting for the next 10 years, is affordable. So you're asking me, you were elected governor to get things done that help Vermonters increase their quality of life and make the state more affordable. You've come up with a plan that you think will work. You've been working on it for years. I'm now asking you as a reporter, you know, why are you doing this now? Well, I've been doing it for years. We finally got an agreement. I think it's a good agreement. And we built in exits so that if some future governor decides it's not, they can get out of it without penalty.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Robert, who is calling from Stowe. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just want to let the governor know that I am basically a Democrat. But as far as I'm concerned, Governor Shumlin, your credibility in health care and related issues is zero. I'd like a refund to the citizens of Vermont for the $300 million that Vermont Health Connect has wasted. It's a complete debacle. I've listened to you many times on VPR telling us how Vermont Health Connect is going to work, how the bugs have been worked out. It has personally caused me 30 or 40 or 50 phone calls trying to get my health care straightened out. It's going to be totally done away with in the future. It was a complete debacle. And I would say, as a Democrat, that your credibility on health care issues is zero. We know the system is broken. I don't think your judgment is a very good judgment. You speak well. You certainly are capable of making your points. But what you're advocating is a major change in the way health care is provided, which is all well and good. This should not happen in a month. It should not be proposed by a panel that does not have extensive public input, including referendum, et cetera.
Okay, Robert, we really appreciate your phone call. We've also gotten a couple of emails on one of the points that Robert was making, and that's Vermont Health Connect. And what the emails are saying is, the state has shown with Vermont Health Connect, it's not very good at putting together healthcare systems. And if the state can't run Vermont Health Connect, how can we expect it to run something like this all-payer system?
So first of all, I just want to respond to what Robert said and appreciate his point of view. We have not spent $300 million on Vermont Health Connect. It's important to know that just in terms of the math, we were given, as were most states that chose to build their own exchange, $200 million of federal money to build a healthcare exchange. What's different, Bob, between Vermont Health Connect and this plan? Vermont Health Connect was brought to us by a federal bill, Obamacare, that I think any reasonable person would say that Washington, who wrote this bill, overestimated the ability of technology to be built that could provide computerized healthcare shopping. And that's why President Obama struggled to get his federal exchange working. That's why every state that built an exchange had trouble. The technology simply wasn't able to quickly be invented to have you choose plans, have it check your income with the IRS. In the case of Vermont, check your income with the state of Vermont because we do additional subsidies, roll it up into a neat little package, and send you the health care that you chose. So all of us, governors who try to do this, as well as the president, had real problems. Remember, the president fired the same health care computer company that we did and hired the same one to fix it that we did. Vermont system's now working, and it's working very effectively. And let's remember that we had the good judgment in Vermont of not only building an exchange for the 32,000 folks who roughly who buy insurance on it, but also we used the money to fix our old archaic Medicaid technology and frankly used this federal windfall to save Vermont taxpayers money. So we're now serving all of Medicaid integrated into our exchange. And so here's the point. I argue that it works better than the federal exchange, that it's working well for Vermonters, and that it's also serving our Medicaid population, and that's a big deal.
So let me ask you this. You've got a series of public hearings. I think there are 3 or 4 or 5 public hearings coming up that the Green Mountain Care Board is going to hold in different parts of the state. What happens if the feedback at those public hearings is a lot of confusion or downright opposition? How are you going to weigh the feelings and the thoughts of Vermonters going forward? Will you put this thing on hold if a lot of people come out and say, time out on this one, we need to think this through?
Well, you know, when I want to let the hearings happen and then we'll make that judgment. But I think that Vermonters, businesses and others understand that the current system is not going to be sustainable, that it will bankrupt us, and that we're not getting the outcomes we should for the money we're spending. And I think what we should do is, before we make judgments about whether it's good or bad, it's complicated. Come and listen to the facts. Come learn about it. And then let's see where we are. But I feel very strongly, Bob, that this is the right change for Vermont. And regardless of what Robert said, I'm pretty proud of my healthcare accomplishments, that we've got universal coverage, that we have an exchange that now works not only for the folks who are buying Vermont Health Connect products, but it's now serving our entire Medicaid population. And I'm proud of the fact that I think we've come up with an agreement that will make other sensible changes to our healthcare system that will make it more affordable and improve quality going forward.
Well, presumably you're holding the public hearings because you want to get feedback from healthcare providers, from consumers, from all sorts of people across the state of Vermont. So if their reaction is one of confusion or opposition, why wouldn't you listen to it?
I expect confusion. This is an incredibly confusing topic. But I don't want to speculate on whether people will think it's a good idea or a bad idea, because most people don't understand it yet. So I'm not going to color that one or shade it. I believe, based upon having been really intimately involved with these negotiations, that when folks see what we've got in a draft agreement, again, it's a draft agreement, that when they see that it's optional and that we have a good financial deal for Vermont, my guess is that most Vermonters will say, if providers wish to make this choice, why should we stop them?
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. We've been talking about the all-payer healthcare system. We're going to move on to a bunch of other topics. What's on your mind? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Peter Shumlin. Time to move on to lots of other topics. What's on your mind? 1-800-639-2211. We'll try to buzz through as many as possible in the time remaining. Let's start with Naomi, who is calling from Moncton. Hey, Naomi, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I'm very interested in an ethics commission. I think we need a lot more accountability, particularly from people that are high up in the administration. And speaking as somebody who lives in Moncton, I believe strongly that if we had an effective ethics commission, the pipeline never would have been built.
All right, Governor, what do you think about an ethics commission? It came up during the legislative session. There was a proposal for quite a big one. It was going to be several million dollars and an investigative staff. Does Vermont need an ethics commission?
I think it does. And I agree with Naomi that it's a good idea. You know, restoring faith in government at a time when we got a guy running for the president of the United States who, when in a debate, the opposing candidate says, "You didn't pay federal taxes. You're a billionaire. You don't hold up. You don't support our vets. You don't support our road rebuilding." And the candidate turns and goes, "Yeah, that's right. I'm a good business person. I don't pay taxes," basically was his answer. When you look at, you know, the mistrust in government from people lining their own pockets, we should have an ethics commission. Now, having said that, one of the best kept secrets in Vermont is that my administration, no one joins my administration, the executive branch of government, without signing a code of ethics that we all live by. And you are not able to do things that you could do in other branches of government because they don't have an ethics policy. So what I've always said about Vermont ethics policy is, yes, we should have it, and yes, it should apply to everybody who's elected, not just the folks in the executive branch. Now, the only thing I want to respond to from Naomi's comments is, I want to make very clear that not only do we have an ethics policy administration, and it's a good one, but the pipeline was not influenced by anything except for policy choices. There's never been any accusations of ethical misdeeds that I know of related to the pipeline being built out.
Now, the pipeline, it's almost doubled in cost from its original projections. Is it still worth pursuing?
Well, my view is yes, and I know Naomi disagrees with me, but natural gas is still half of the cost of oil, and it's a lot cleaner fuel to burn. Having said that, that's not a determination that I make. That's what the board has to do. And the pipeline would not be approved, cannot be approved. And just, you know, what the board has to ask, the independent board, is this in the best economic interests of Vermonters? And they have come back time and time again and said, even looking at the cost overruns, yes, it still makes economic sense.
We got this email from Heather in Elmore. "My family is an ideal example of young professionals in search of a rural town in a progressive state. We brought our professional skills and our children to a town with the freedom to choose the best fit for their education. We've witnessed firsthand during the last 4 months what Act 46 is doing to small towns, and it isn't pretty." And Heather would like to know, you know, should Act 46, the school district consolidation law, be mandatory? It's mandatory right now. What about making it voluntary?
Well, I guess I would disagree with that. I think it's voluntary. Any community that doesn't want to change their school district doesn't have to.
Well, the Board of Education has the authority. If a school district, a small school district, hasn't merged with another district by 2019, then the State Board of Education can actually mandate that they merge with another district.
Well, that is very unlikely to happen against a town's will. I think the legislation encourages towns through tax incentives to find a more sensible delivery system. And you can't tell me that in a state that has lost 20,000 students, where property taxes continue to be higher than anyone wishes to pay, that structural change in our education system, just like in healthcare, couldn't bring about better outcomes for less money. And I think, you know, Act 46 is a great example of how things should happen. It's directed from Montpelier. In other words, no question, Montpelier is saying, we want you to have these conversations about how you can build a more efficient school system that will cost less money and, most importantly, give additional opportunities to students to improve quality. But it doesn't say you must. And in the legislation, if you end up on that date with a community who hasn't merged, they have the opportunity to go to the board and say, this is why, this is what we want to do. And the board can say, great, keep it up. I don't think you're going to see ever in Vermont a board saying to communities, you shall do this. They'll encourage them, they'll cajole them, they'll try to get them to think about other options. But I think Act 46 is optional.
Let's talk about the vacancy on the Vermont Supreme Court. Justice John Dooley has announced he won't seek another six-year term on the court. He was appointed back in 1987 by Governor Madeleine Kuhnen. Now, his retirement isn't going to take place until March of 2017. So why are you filling the vacancy now?
Well, I'm filling not only that vacancy, but two other court vacancies where the vacancies haven't happened yet. And that's common when a governor goes out and chooses new judges. The way what the law says, and it's very clearly written by the legislature, is that when a governor either resigns or does not choose to go for retention, the governor shall appoint a replacement. And, you know, I find it curious that we're having this conversation about the Supreme Court justice. No one is asking me why I've asked the nominating committee to send me two names for the two Superior Court judges I'm going to be filling between now and when I retire. So I guess I'd turn a question on you. What's the difference between the Supreme Court justice and the two Superior Court judges that you had no problem with me appointing?
You know, I wonder, are you going to be making an appointment, well, presumably before you leave at the beginning of January, but that person isn't going to join the court until sometime in the middle of March. So is it an appointment with a delay built into it?
Well, this often happens. When you appoint a judge, they don't get sworn in the next day. There's always a lag between the judge being appointed, the judge getting out of their obligations. If they're in a law practice, they often have to wind that down for a few months. So all I'm saying is that the only unusual thing about this is that when the judge is sworn in, we'll have a new governor. But the law does not say if you're going to have a new governor when the judge is sworn in, the current governor shall not appoint them. That's not what the law says. The law says the governor shall appoint when it's clear that they are not going to seek retention. So I'm following the law. You know, Vermonters hired me as governor to work 24/7 or as often as I can. To do the job I was elected to do. And one of the things the governors do is appoint judges.
Let's get a quick call in from Nan in East Wallingford. Hi, Nan. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you? Hello, Governor.
Hi.
So I'm just referring back to Act 46. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Governor, you said repeatedly that it's voluntary. But I think we all know that that really isn't true. It begins as a voluntary procedure, and school boards get to make that choice. But it is also true that if they do not, they can be forced to merge with whatever district the legislature decides on. And so while it is voluntary to begin with, it's not voluntary. And at least two different districts that I know of have merged out of fear of what would happen if they didn't do it. So to say that it's voluntary really is just not true.
Well, I actually disagree with you on it, and it's definitely not the legislature that decides. What the law says is that the state board has the authority, you're correct, to, in an extreme case, tell a community what they would do. My point is, I think that's a very unlikely outcome. The state board is appointed by the governor, and I don't think you're going to see any state board of education going against the will of a community unless it's an extremely, unusual circumstance. So, you know, it's really not the intent of the law. The intent of the law is to begin conversations about we have a more efficient, better quality, better outcome. And I would say that these are tough conversations. We all know that. But this has been evading Vermonters for generations. We have more bureaucracy in our school system than we should for a small state. And I think the conversations are going very, very well across the state. Many are choosing to consolidate. I think it's going to bring better outcomes for kids, a more affordable property taxes in the long run. And I think Act 46 may well be go down as one of the great changes in our education system in the last 100 years.
That's all the time we have today. Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Rutland has been approved as Vermont's newest refugee resettlement community, and up to 100 mostly Syrian refugees are expected to move to Rutland over the next year. Tomorrow on the program, we'll hear why Rutland was chosen and get details about when and how the resettlement will occur. Send your questions or comments to VermontEdition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Our director is Mary Williams. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.